Today's sponsor is Kualu. If you'd like to get started with a domain name and a website today, just click on the link in the show notes and that will take you over to Kualu to get started. They also have a live support chat system that you can use, which is in the bottom right hand corner. So get started with a new website and domain name today with Kualu. Hey everybody, if you would like to get the ad-free versions of all of our podcasts and support Entertainment Talk along the way, all you need to do is head over to patreon.com/entertainmenttalk, sign up either as a creator or as a Patreon, there's no difference there. That's just the option for either becoming a creator now or just staying as a patron for the moment. And then all you need to do is support us at the $1 level tier. That will get you access to all of the ad-free podcasts that we've done in the past and get you access to all the ad-free podcasts in that month as well. So it's a great way to support us on Entertainment Talk and to get rid of the ads and get your ad-free podcasts. As always, thank you very much for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Random Gaming Talk. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for video games. I'm your host Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is Roberts. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good as well. Busy, but well, I'm always busy. But no, I am doing well. We're into the first proper week of our summer time off because last week was like we had 2 days that we worked and then finished on a Tuesday for some strange reason. So we've got 5 weeks left of that, one of which has almost gone already. Anyway, what have you been playing?
I've been bouncing between 7 Days to Die and Dragon Quest III. I bought it accidentally, and when I say accidentally, I mean I got a notification that pre-orders for the Dragon Quest 1 and 2 remake were live, and so I bought 3 on accident. I was going to buy it anyway, it's just that 1 and 2 came out, but they released 3 first, because technically 3 is a prequel to 1, which, you know,
okay,
is weird, but okay. So, you know, a little bit of that, a little bit of that. Not much else gaming-wise. I've had thoughts of going back into Expedition 33, but the only thing really left is like achievement hunting and Dark Souls style boss killing, neither of which I'm the biggest fan of. I mean, I could go in for more story stuff, but you know, since I know the endings, the story doesn't hit as hard as it would have.
Right. Cool. Speaking of one, Expedition 33, I finally got my hands on it. I am 6 hours in, I think, depending on if the game clock is actually accurate or not, which 99% of the time I don't think they are. It's brilliant. It's very, very, very good to brilliant so far. I've come across some hard moments. No named characters necessarily have died yet, so I'm kind of bracing myself for that. I really like the combat a lot. Now, there's a lot to get used to, and it is, I was going to say literally hit or miss, because the enemies literally do hit or miss you, and you literally hit or miss them. But, yeah, the combat's fantastic. It's just a case of learning it more each time and figuring out what works with what and who should have what and all those kinds of things. So you've got that all going on as well.
And the thing that I really like about the combat is that they don't overwhelm you. It's like there's a ton of status effects, but they won't tell you what the status effect is until after you get it. And it's the same with combat. They start to really slow, and then they add another mechanic, and then they add another mechanic. But the adding mechanics are not like, you know, 5-10 minutes within each other. Sometimes you don't get a mechanic until the middle of the second act. So.
But yeah, there's a few things still to learn and to get used to. The one thing I'm still kind of getting used to is Mael's stances and how all of that kind of works. So I'm kind of still getting used to each character, and the problem is with the way I'm playing. I don't know why this keeps happening, but every single time I sort of feel like I've got going with it and to got into like a good session, then I've had to go off and do something else or whatever. So that's kind of sucked each time. But
Yeah, with combat, you really have to kind of get into the rhythm of your skills. So what I wound up defaulting to with Mael is that both Mael and Lune have a skill that stacks fire burns. So it's basically a damage over time. Well, Mael has a combat attack to where if you attack somebody that has a fire skill, it puts you in virtuoso stance. Virtuoso stance does 200% damage. So it's kind of a 1-2-3 combo. You get set up with a fire, you get yourself in virtuoso stance, and then you hit them with your biggest damage attack. And that biggest damage attack does 200%. And you'll find two or three combat skills that you tend to lean on a lot. A streamer that I follow, Don't Rage Quit, just absolutely fell in love with this game. And kind of her go-to skill with Lune was to actually have Mael do the fire attack, and then she would ice lance the enemy, which would give Lune another turn and 3 action points. And then she would hit with whatever big spell she had, or if the party needed healing, she would hit Typhoon, which does damage and heals the party and puts regenerate on the party. That's a much later skill. You won't see that for a while. But with all the characters, you'll find that 2-3-4 skill combo that just it makes the most sense. Now, I make no promises when you start getting into the weed with Pictos. Pictos is a combination of Mike Myers in GoldenEye and Goldmember 3, where he's cross-eyed, combined with that meme of all the math equations flying across the room with the X-Files theme playing. Oof, that will give you a headache trying to figure out all those pictos.
No, I've tried to look in as many different menus as possible and all that kind of stuff, because there needs to be a good balance of like you playing the game, then reassessing what you've got and things like that, and then obviously, enjoying the story and stuff. So no, I think it's brilliant so far. It's not quite got onto that kind of 10 out of 10 outstanding thing yet, but I feel like I'm so early so far that I've not, like, I feel like I'm just sort of still at the beginning of the game. So
Yeah, if you're 6 hours in, you are. Once you really start hitting those story elements, especially when you find the journals of past expeditions and you start getting into more and more of the characters, that's when it really becomes just like chef's kiss good.
I found a couple of those, I think like four or five maybe. I quite like the idea of that, and sort of because I know some people don't like what they would call audio logs and stuff, but that totally makes sense as to why it's there. But I'm kind of curious as to like the overall idea, this sort of every year a new expedition goes out and I guess it's failed each time or something, so what's going to kind of happen with this lot. But it was interesting going through like the actual beginning of the game, where it's sort of you're basically slowly walking through this town and you get to choose who to talk to, and of course because you don't really know anybody, it's sort of how are they going to add to parts of the story and things like that. So I thought that was quite good as well.
Did you fight the mime in the main city when you started?
Maybe I
That's an
think.
achievement if you beat the mime in Lumiere at the very start. So I was just curious. I don't know if you were gonna go for 100%, but that's a hidden achievement slash trophy because you got to fight the mime in the very beginning.
No, I'm not aiming for like a platinum or anything. I just want to, obviously, if I end up loving the game and I want to go back in, then Probably will, but it's got a good balance though of rewarding feeling in terms of like going through this world, and the world like looks amazing. Again, not going to pretend I'm suddenly the biggest graphics person, but I can recognize and appreciate something when it's in front of me. But yeah, the graphics are incredible, and it's not just the quality of it; it's the like design of this world and like that sort of water city and everything.
Yeah.
Like there's
And
I
you get what I meant when I said it's heavily inspired by, late 19th century French impressionist
oh yeah
painters.
oh yeah definitely. Yeah, I'm loving the French DNA that's all over this game. It's brilliant. In fact, I kind of want that in more things, whether it shows, games, films, whatever, because it's just there's something very cool about that. Depends how it gets used and how much it is in a piece of media, but I'm really loving that as well. So, but no, even for me, for somebody who doesn't really, I don't really look at things or admire like a certain view or something. But sometimes when you emerge from somewhere, especially in that water city, that was like a big highlight, and you look up and you just see just things in the sky. It's really, really cool at doing that. So I'm appreciating this world. Like the design of the enemies is really brilliant. The designs don't make sense, but I don't feel like they're just sort of there as these odd kind of creatures. But I still think they just look really, really cool as well.
I'll only say they make sense eventually once you get through the story.
But I'm whether it's the there's lots of different types of looking ones. There's ones that are more kind of almost ceramic and plastic looking, and then there's the sort of metal and glass ones. I think they look really cool. But yeah, it's just a case of just getting used to the game more and more, trying to learn more and more of what I'm doing. Obviously pick up stuff, unlock certain skills, all those sorts of things, and then keep going. But no, going back to what I was saying a minute ago, it's got a very rewarding feeling in terms of like traversing the world, looking at it and admiring it, and then getting, actual cutscenes and things, and getting more of the story. And there was like a moment that Mael had in the story, which was quite curious. I'm assuming that's being like pinned for later, during this like boss fight. And then yeah, just like menu management and all those sorts of things. So, but the good sense of it that I get is, because I've heard dozens of other people talk about it. You've talked about it, and other people as well, and have all said, it's easy game of the year contender, phenomenal game, and all that sort of thing. Even though I'm not at that point right now because it still feels too early, I can see the seeds of what this thing could end up becoming, and I have a lot of confidence in that as well. So yeah, brilliant so far. Looking forward to just going back, getting into more fights, playing more of the game, experiencing more of the characters, the story, and then probably witnessing one of them die at some point. So yeah, or probably more than one, I suppose. So yeah, very, very, very good so far. That's pretty much all I've been playing. Of course, that's been taking up most of my gaming time anyway. So yeah, absolutely loving it so far. It's quite brilliant. Don't get me wrong, when like an enemy goes to attack you, for example, and you miss a parry or you miss a dodge, it can feel quite ugly. I'm like, oh damn, I missed it, and it makes you feel kind of not great. But then, man, when you hit a parry, and then when you hit a parry and get a counter, it's like one of the best feelings in the world. Especially one that I really love as well is when you jump and then parry. That's like really, really great as well. So it's got that kind of satisfying feeling to it. Anyway, that's the stuff we've been playing. Got some news to get into and things like that. But some housekeeping first, so let's get into that first. See you for that in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right-hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there. If you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, recently on Gaming Talk, recently on Entertainment Talk rather, we've got another, as of today, because it's Wednesday, another refreshed Breaking Bad podcast. We're almost put out all of the Season 3 ones, because this is Season 3, Episode 11, which is for ABQ, so there's 2 more of those to put out. David is now back from holiday, because this week's Geek Town Radio is already out as of yesterday, so obviously go and check that out as well. But I think our rough plan, at least me and David's podcast plans, is wait for those 2 more to come out, because we don't need to sort of jump on recording Season 4 just yet. Watch the second season of Walking Dead: Dead City at some point, because we covered the first season and we've covered Walking Dead together. Do that, kind of get that, not out the way, but get that one finished, because it'll be shorter as well. And then once the rest of the Breaking Bad podcast has come out, which is only 2 more, we can then, because it's been a couple of years since we've actually covered the show, because things kept coming out and whatever else. And then, let's say within the next few weeks or so, we will start Breaking Bad Season 4, which is a rewatch podcast, by the way. We've both seen the show, but this is a rewatch podcast for that. So that's the Breaking Bad stuff. Over on other TV season reviews, I did a Don't Skip review for Squid Game Seasons 2 and 3. In case some of you don't know, yes, Squid Game did indeed come back for Season 2 and 3. The show has very definitively concluded. There won't be a Season 4, but they're looking at doing maybe an American spin-off. And of course, there's the reality game show version, which I've also seen. I'm not going to review that season. It was Season 1 of The Challenge for Squid Game, which is a good, it was an interesting kind of change of pace, like the way they did it and all that kind of stuff. So that was really good. But that anyway is for the last 2 seasons of Squid Game, for Seasons 2 and 3. So yeah, if you don't know that those came out, there's 2 seasons of Squid Game to enjoy, which I will lightly recommend, I suppose. And then you can watch the challenge show after that if you're still interested. Over on the United cast, of course, Monday Night come back. Next month on August 17th, we'll be playing Arsenal at home for the beginning of our 25-26 season. There's been some transfers happening. I talked about a few of them on that podcast and talked about my expectations and everything that is surrounding Manchester United Football Club at the moment, which something new is happening every day at the moment. So there's that, but that's the season preview for the 25-26 season, which will, the next podcast will be for when we've played Arsenal on the 17th, and we'll see what happens in that game. Over on Gaming Talk last week, we talked about the Assassin's Creed TV series for Netflix, some tidbits and information on Battlefield 6, and we talked about content creation as well. Of course, last week's refreshed Breaking Bad podcast was for the iconic Fly episode. That's for Season 3, Episode 10, so you can check that one out as well. Over on some film reviews, a Don't Skip review for Superman. This is both the Superman reboot and the reboot for the new DCU, helmed by one James Gunn. Of course, this film is written and directed by him, and he's also the studio head, lead head, creative head, whatever. so there's that one. I have not seen Fantastic Four yet. That should happen in the next, some point in the next couple of days, I think. Hopefully tomorrow, if not maybe the next day, if not maybe over the weekend, we shall see. Over on so there's that one. Some game reviews. Did a strong must-play review for South of Midnight, which I recently played. Of course, my next review probably will be for Expedition 33. I can't see myself quitting the game because it's, you know, really good. So that will probably be my next video game review once, of course, I finish the game itself. And that's what we've been doing recently on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into some news. Alright, speaking of TV shows, which we've talked about a few of them there, and of course we're in the era of, we're in the only golden era of video game adaptions, because they used to be very bad. Some of them still aren't great, but we're in a much better era for them now than what we used to be. However, we've got some new details. This is from both IGN and Collider. It says, new details on the live-action God of War series, which, remember, got restarted at one point, didn't it? They sort of threw out the scripts, fired the showrunner and brought somebody new in, so it's going to be a minute before we see anything from it, but we have some tidbits of information here. So season one is going to be 10 episodes. That could be changed depending on certain stuff, but it looks like they're aiming for 10 episodes. The scripts are still being written. I'd imagine so, given the fact that, when did we talk about that last? About 6 months ago, maybe?
It's been a while.
Yeah. It was within, like, some point within the last year we read the report about the scripts being thrown out. So yeah, makes sense that they're still being written. It will adapt the Norse era of games and focus on Kratos and Atreus. Game director Corey Barlog is actively involved, and filming may begin in 2026 at the earliest. So basically, you can pin this for Q3 2027. It depends, because, you know, we're in a bit more of an era now where things can be scrapped and restarted like that, right? So, I mean, okay, let's hypothetically say, because I'm just trying to put, like, timelines on things, right? Let's say that, okay, scripts are being written right now, and this is essentially the second attempt at doing this. Let's say, now there's no reason to think this is going to happen, but I'm just speculating and, you know, trying to put timelines in place. If you did end up scrapping this again, obviously they would just attempt a third attempt and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, if they're filming now and, sorry, not filming, you don't have a cast yet. If they're writing now, and then they probably are looking at cast members right now, because even though the script is being written, I would guess they would have at least an idea on what they want Kratos to look like and be like, you know, like what version of that character they want, and what type of cast they would be looking for. And the same for Atreus, and the same for all those other characters. So they're probably doing, like, I would imagine they'd be doing auditions right now while they're writing. I know some creators or writers or whatever sometimes say that they'll wait for a script to be fully written and, like, 100% nailed down before they start looking at, like, cast or anything like that, because sometimes, and I've heard this from multiple different, you know, directors, producers, writers, that, because your script basically, at the end of the day, is everything, because you can, I've seen it multiple times, you can have the best cast in the world, fantastic sets, brilliant people involved, but if your script is not buttoned down, it gives you basically less chance of being successful, because your script is everything at the end of the day. That they will, like, some, let's say, people, whatever, will make sure the script is, like, 100% buttoned down. This is the, we don't need any rewrites, we're completely certain about it. And then they'll go and look for cast members, because they then have an A to B kind of, at least for, with this, at least for, like, a first season, because obviously if you're going to do a season two, you'll have at least mostly your same cast for the next seasons, unless there's new characters or rewrites or whatever, that you'll get the script 100% buttoned down, and then you'll start looking for people, because then you completely, truthfully know what actor you want. But different people in the industry work different ways. I think I've seen opposite examples as well, where before, even though they've got an idea of what they want to do, before anything's written, they'll know what type of person they want for a certain character, even before something's being written. These are just different examples I've heard from different creatives over the years. But it feels probably like all of the parts are moving at once at the moment. So we got that going on. Some people have been disappointed, and I kind of am a bit as well, because obviously you've got the Greek and you've got the Norse era. The Norse is the newer era, so the 2018 and Ragnarok games. I remember a report ages ago, I think this is when they first started talking about this, that what they might do, and it sounds like it's heading more in this direction, you'll start with the Norse games and then do flashbacks. The thing is, if you, because I believe there's what, three core Greek games? I know there's like spin-offs, and I don't know about all of them, but I know there's
Yeah, it's three core Greek games.
there's a God of War, you know, one, two, and three. That if you were to, let's say, start there, that will take you longer, but then that will give you more seasons, and you know, presuming that this works, which I have no reason to think it won't, it may get you more money, I suppose. But because there's two options you could have possibly taken with this, which is you start at God of War 1 in the Greek era, which you may even have a different person playing Kratos for that because he was very different. I don't know. And then you do, let's say, maybe a season for each game. I don't know how long the story is for each of those games. And you'd end up with maybe five seasons because you do God of War 1, 2, 3, and then 18 and Ragnarok. Whereas this time, you're going to cut and back, cut back and forth quite a bit. Now I don't mind the character sort of, let's say, being in a moment, they'll be having a reflective moment and they'll have a flashback or something, right? And I'm also surprised that, because let's be honest, when it does come to obviously popular stuff, as long as the thing is working, a company will want more of it. So I'm just kind of surprised from, because I think it's Amazon that are doing this, obviously licensed by Sony. In partnership with Santa Monica Studios, because Corey Barlog is the lead over there, that you wouldn't want more seasons. But I'm wondering if you're going to do a bunch of flashbacks, maybe even entire flashback episodes, that will you end up with about five seasons anyway, but you'll just be cutting back and forth between them? I'm not sure how that's going to work. Anyway, what do you think of particularly them going to the north, the starting with the Norse era, but probably doing flashbacks to the Greek one? What do you think of that approach?
I mean, it makes it sense in the short term because the gamers and the people that would watch this show are way more familiar with the Norse games. It's like I doubt you've played any of the Greek games unless
No,
you
I
found
haven't.
it like on a
No.
classic.
No. No. I am interested in them, but there isn't great ways to play them, because I think all of them are PS3 streamable, which is that's a no-go for me. So,
Yeah,
I'm
they're
surprised.
PS2 games.
I'd be very surprised if Sony's not working on remasters for those, because those seem like a obvious thing to do. So,
Yeah, since when has Sony ever done the obvious thing to do?
true. Yeah.
And as for the first season, you're being super generous with the timeline. I'd be shocked if it came out any earlier than 2029. Just because that something like that would have to go through so much script rewriting. So much editing, so much
Yeah, it's true.
post, production, CGI. Like, if they started today, I could maybe see 2027. But the fact is that they don't have a cast or a script. Good luck at getting that done before 2026. And then 2 years puts you into 2028 at best.
Yeah. I suppose with the cast, it could always be, let's say that right now they've figured out who's playing Kratos and Atreus. And it depends if you're going to include, like, because there isn't that big of a cast for the two games. If it's the case that you have picked a lot of them, but you just haven't announced them yet, because, you know, NDAs, contracts, who knows, whatever else, could be dotting some I's and crossing some T's. And who knows if, like, when they tried to do this before, if there were some people that were picked, but maybe they've been ditched because a new version or something. I totally get what you mean, but It depends on how much of this has been decided. So let's say like filming locations. We don't know if they've decided that or if any sets have been built, or they might be too early for that kind of stuff. So we don't completely know like everything that would have been decided, because some of those things haven't been probably announced yet. But to go along with what you're saying, if it's a case of they haven't like got any apart from the green light to do the series, if it's like early stages writing the first season, then yeah, that's going to take a long time. I'm just saying we don't know what other things have been decided that we don't know about yet. So, okay, so if you're doing, let's say season one, I would say, 'cause I'm trying to remember, because I only played these games once each, because I didn't end up actually liking them that much. But I'm trying to think. Okay, would you be able to cover game one in season one? Assuming that depends on. Okay, obviously God of War is known for its big set pieces, right? Like Kratos climbing on something and smashing its head in. But the like workbench stuff and the upgrade things and like the general gameplay bit to bit, like how much of that's going to be cut out? I don't see how you wouldn't cover the first game in the first season, especially if it's 10 episodes and you probably have what, 45 minutes to an hour for the episode. What do you think on how much one season, 10 episodes could cover?
It could cover a lot or a little. It just depends on how much actual story script they put in there and how much BS fluff they put in there.
That's true. Plus, like, if there's any newer bits or like expansions on certain stuff that we didn't see, and also if you are doing flashbacks to Greek stuff, I still think you could probably cover the first game in the first season. But then, because I don't remember the second game's got a lot in there as well. But if you're gonna do 10 episodes, maybe for season two, you could probably cover that game. But I can't see this whole thing being done in two seasons. That feels almost too short, and like there's too much money to be made there. But I guess they'll figure it out once they get the ball rolling. It's cool that Corey Barlog is involved. I'm currently trying to watch, I think it was at the DICE Awards. There's this video with Corey Barlog and Neil Druckmann, and they're both talking about like their, because they have different processes for making games and things like that, and they're both kind of both are chatting back and forth about like how they come up with ideas and all that sort of thing. So I've been quite enjoying that actually as well. I'm about halfway through that video. Yeah, he's involved, which is great. Obviously, because he directed, I don't think it was the second game. I think it was 2018 that he directed at least. So that would be great. Any clues? Any early Kratos and Atreus? Who could play the two of them?
Honestly, I don't know, just because my mind immediately goes to Christopher Judge, who could play it, but he's the age thing would probably be an issue, and obviously whoever plays Atreus is going to have that issue as well.
Again, because these are both godlike people, because that's what the world is. It's, I mean, okay, you look at Atreus and you'd see, I think with his age, he's supposed to be portrayed as like a 15, 16-year-old type of kid, but because he's a god as well, it's not like. Like you look at Thor and he's supposed to be like what, over 100 years old or something. It's not Thor. Thor, and he's supposed to be like over 100 years old. But then obviously you'd cast a human to play them on a screen, who obviously won't look 100. So I guess some sort of teen actor. I'm not really sure, because he's got a very kind of particular look to him as well. I don't know. I have to see. I know a lot of people would default like Tom Holland for that or something. I think for what that character, from what I remember about that character, I think Tom Holland would be a bit too old to play that. I wouldn't mind Jason Momoa as Kratos. I've seen him in a few, like in oh, what was the Apple series called? It was called C. He was really, really, in fact, he was much better even in that than what he is in. I know a lot of people know him from Game of Thrones and that, which he was only in for a short time, but He was very, very good in that. That gave him like a good stepping stone to other things in his career. But he was really, really good in C, and I could almost see some of his character in Kratos if you write it differently, adapt it differently. So he'd be kind of my number one, I think. Plus he's great at doing action. I'm sure if he, I've seen a few shouts for like Triple H and people like how was the other person's name? I don't know. I'm not aware of how good Triple H is as an actor. So,
He okay.
I'm just more familiar with Jason Momoa's work, so he'd be my tip for
Are you
that.
thinking of Dave Bautista as the other one?
He's one. There's another one that people think often. It's not coming to mind. But yeah, Dave Bautista is another.
Brock Lesnar would probably be as big as well.
I think Jason's a bit more. Not that Kratos is expressive, because one of his whole deals is how much he shuts himself off, which just annoys me. But I think Jason's just a bit more expressive as an actor than I love
Yeah.
Dave Bautista as well. But yeah, so I just
If
I'm
we had to
struck.
go with somebody younger, I would probably see Alan Richardson from the Reacher series.
Oh, that's a
He
good
could
shout.
probably do a good job in that.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Maybe he could do the although I doubt you'd have someone different for the flashbacks, because that would kind of, I don't know. Depends almost also how much like makeup and stuff that person's gonna be under. I mean, you can see Kratos' face quite clearly and everything. It's not like he's in Avatar or something, you know. But no, I can't think of a single person to play play Atreus. So Chandler Riggs, no, not Chandler Riggs. I'm just trying to think of young-ish, although Chandler Riggs isn't as young as he used to be when he was on Walking Dead. I can only think of people like maybe like a Cady Fleming who's at that age, but no. Because I was also thinking of like the Stranger Things kids, but none of them are kids anymore. So because I was thinking of like not specifically for Atreus, but just young actors like Millie Bobby Brown. But again, none of those kids are kids anymore, are they? They're all like mothers and married and adults. They're all in like their 20s now. So,
Well, that's nothing new. Ralph Macchio was like 24 or 25 when he did the first Karate Kid movie, so.
So, but no, I'm trying to think of actors that are like 14 to 16-ish, and I can only think of Kelly Fleming right now, who I think is about that age. So anyway, we'll see what happens with this in the coming weeks, months, if not years, and see who gets cast as what first. Anyways, move on from that and talk about one of my favorite things, which is The Last of Us. There's something new on sale for it, and no, before anybody panics, because apparently remakes and remasters are reasons to panic, even though there's genuine things to worry about in the world. Anyway, it says here, The Last of Us scripts Part 1, Left Behind, and Part 2 by Neil Druckmann and Hayley Gross will be released in a 618-page book by Dark Horse Books and Naughty Dog on December 16th, just in time for Christmas. It says the book will also feature a foreword by Troy Baker, who of course did Joel, played Joel in the game, and an art gallery by, I'm going to butcher this name, but I'm going to attempt it, Hyeong Nam. It's a H-Y-O, sorry, H, and then Young, and then Nam, Nam. So yeah, the scripts are being sold in like an actual, like, rather than, when you see an actor reading a script and it's basically just pages stapled together, not in that kind of form, but in like an official book form, with quite a nice sort of cover to it, obviously with everybody's relevant names on it. I did click on the, it confused because Amazon can be slightly confusing sometimes. There was a link attached to this tweet that was like, hey, you can go and pre-order it now. I think it was $60 or $70. I clicked on it and add it in the dollar amount, and there was a lot of comments saying like, hey, is it available for the UK? And nobody had quite of a good answer. And I clicked on the Amazon link myself, because like, okay, surely you can flip it over to the, because it's .com instead of .co.uk. But then it said something like, it looks like you're trying to buy this from the UK region, so we're showing you the relevant one, but it had dollars and all that kind of, anyway, I just had a quick kind of look at it. I think that's very cool that they're deciding to do this. I know that now and again you'll get, let's say, great writers or whatever that, years after a project, they'll say, "Hey, this is," they'll just kind of randomly or whatever, NDA is out and about, tweet sort of, "Hey, this is one of our big scenes from this game, this thing. Here's what the script looked like," so that you can kind of, remember the scene itself and then kind of like read it. And of course, they've got all the different bits and pieces, because it's not just a case of this character says this, then this character says this. There's things like, camera must move this way, describe this thing, character does this action. So I like the kind of detail that are in those sorts of things. The curiosity I would have from reading this, so it's part one, Left Behind, and part two, is not the case of, "Oh, there's a line that Ellie or Joel said that I've heard, 10, 15 different times." It's also a case of when you, because of how detailed the production is on those sorts of games, and when you get those in between bits, those are the bits that I'm kind of almost more interested in reading. I mean, it's still curious to read like the script of like the dialogue and things like that, but what I'm almost kind of more interested in is like the in between bits and kind of, because I've never I've like seen what a script looks like, from when scripts have been tweeted out and things like that over the years, but I've never actually, at least from a professional production, I've never sat down and like read a script. But so I know what's in one, but I've never like read it properly, if that sort of makes sense. So I'd be curious to kind of, obviously you'd probably read from Sarah and Joel's first interaction. He comes home late at night, he's talking to Tommy on the phone, and then there's the whole watch thing and all that kind of thing. So that's obviously where you would start. But what would be fascinating to me is obviously reading through those bits, then imagining or remembering those scenes myself, and then reading all the in-between bits and sort of trying to imagine and trying to figure out in my mind, like, okay, what did this look like? And I've seen, documentaries and all that sort of stuff on both games. I think they're both called Grounded, and so I've seen that. So it would be kind of a mixture of remembering what I've seen in the documentaries as like how they made them, then remembering what the scenes look like in the game, and then reading the script itself and kind of, I guess, gluing those three things together and just giving myself more imagination from that, if that makes sense. Plus you've got the kind of where it says like camera pans to this, and these other bits and pieces. So I'm curious to kind of read through that and, yeah, just see how all those bits kind of come together. But yeah, quite a long script, 618 pages. I think that's for all three of them put together. I'd assume that this would be, you'd read, unless there's like editorial notes and things like that, which there probably is, I'd imagine it would start with part one, finish on the okay line, and then the middle bit would be Left Behind, because Left Behind came out after Last of Us 1, because it was the year later, and then through all of that, and then I would guess the third bit would be part two from start to beginning, from start to end. So, yeah, I guess I'll be asking for this for Christmas if I can, if anybody wants to spend that much money on me for a script or whatever the case may be. So that's very, very cool. Any thoughts on this being not just, thrown out as a script, but put into sort of a book for fans to buy and to read through?
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, there's a. I'm curious as to how much. Is it just going to be a straight one-to-one from what was written to what made the show? Or is it going to include all the edits and director's notes and cast notes and things like that? Now, if it had all those notes in it, then I'd be very interested. Well, the people that would be big fans of this would be probably way more interested. But yeah, that would be way more interesting of a buy if it had like editorial notes in it.
I wonder if it's kind of, for example, I remember when I got to the end of Robert Kirkman's Walking Dead, and like you read the last you look at and read the last panel and all that sort of stuff, and then there's like a full on like thank you letter at the end. I know it's not the same as like an editorial note like you're saying, but 'cause I'm now realizing how little of these kind of things I've read. I know what you mean by an editorial note and that kind of stuff, but that goes into sort of him talking about the process of it. So yeah, I am wondering as well how much of that is in between certain stuff. I'm imagining for the actual script itself, it would be the final version. But then if there were changes or little bits and pieces, because obviously it wasn't just, oh, we wrote this once, we stuck with it, and then that was it. Like that doesn't that happens sometimes, but it's incredibly rare. I mean, if you were to write, especially for something that's a big IP and got lots of attention on it, I almost think it's a would be a bad idea that if you just sort of, okay, we wrote this thing really, in a couple of weeks, and we never needed to edit it, and we just did it in one go. You'd almost get maybe the worst version of a product from that if you didn't kind of question things and stuff like that. So yeah, I wonder if there's kind of that. It would either maybe be a case that like depends on how in chapters this is done. Like if it's, chapter this, it's this part, and obviously there's different chapters in the games, so I wonder if it's put out that way. But yeah, if there's notes and stuff like that in it. But I imagine for the actual script, like what the characters say, where the camera go, that would be the final version. Probably that would make the most sense. But I mean, even if it was, you could read the script online or something like that, or if you could read them in like the normal paper, I probably would still do that. But then at this point, with this being announced, this will probably be the best way to read through it. So that would be very, very cool. I've still got to read through that. There's only one piece of Last of Us material I've never consumed, which is there's a for those of you that don't know, there's a comic book called American Dreams, and it is based on or adapted from the Left Behind chapter. I have it downstairs. I've had it for ages. I've just not read it. I've also got Adventures of Pinocchio, which Liza P is based on. That's in my room. I just haven't read it yet. And then there's the Liza P art book that I know you don't read that as much, but you look at it. I haven't gone through that properly. So yeah, turns out if I end up getting this as well, I'll have a good chunk of reading to do. So where are you at with kind of do you read much? Like obviously you read things, but do you read many kind of books and stuff in that kind of way?
Not really video game books. I do read more than a few books. I'll look for something that's like a $2, $3 book on Amazon for Kindle or the Apple Store. So I have more than a few digital books. Weirdly enough, I actually buy the physical books a lot for my dad because he's a big fan of having that physical copy.
I've read like some comic books digital. I read some of Walking Dead digital, but is there something particular about like, because I agree with that, having an actual, whether it's the paperback or hardcover, I'm not particularly bothered by that, but having an actual physical book in your hand and then like physically flipping the pages, there's something very particular about that as opposed to just, clicking next page or something. So whenever I have read, because I've read like some Batman, I've read some Spider-Man, obviously read through all of Walking Dead. So when I have properly gone through and done that, I've preferred to have the actual books in my hand. So, all right, so we'll see how that goes by December 16th. That is it 8 days before Christmas? Yeah, about a week or so before Christmas actually happens. So, gotta let people know that I want that before that day comes up. So, yeah, I only need, one person to buy it or two people to chip in or whatever. So, we'll see how that goes. Yeah, that's gonna be because I wasn't sure what I want. Not that, I mean, kind of early to think of Christmas, but also not really because it will be here at some point to think of what I wanted for Christmas. But yeah, this is the first proper thing that I've thought of what I want, apart from certain tattoos that I really want. But I guess I could ask because you can't really. And because you can't do a surprise tattoo thing for Christmas of like, oh, suddenly got this on my, because you have to physically go there as well, right? Like you can't unwrap that for Christmas. So, unless you get knocked out and I don't know. Anyway, yeah, there's a few tattoos I still really, really want as well. So, those are a couple of my gift ideas that I want. Anyway, that's all my news for this week. How about yourself?
Okay, well, first up, that massive thumping sound you heard over the weekend wasn't, an ecological disaster
Okay.
or anything astronomical. It was all the Sony fanboys stomping their feet, throwing a tantrum, because Sony is officially now third party. So a job popped up on the Sony job board, senior director, multi-platform, and account management. So this is a job in San Mateo, California. It does say remote okay, West Coast preferred. Overview: reporting to the vice president, commercial management as senior director of multi-platform accounting management, you will play a critical role in the shaping and executing of global commercial strategies for PlayStation Studio software titles across all digital platforms beyond PlayStation hardware, including Steam, Epic Game Stores, Xbox, Nintendo, and mobile. This role is accountable for optimizing title profitability, ensuring cross-functional alignment, and leading high-performing teams focused on multi-platform expansion, mid-range commercial planning, and platform partner management. This is a high level position, heavy qualifications, 10 years plus experience in game publishing, digital media, or platform facing commercial roles. Starting salary 235,000 US, sorry, 245,000 US to 369,000 US, depending on experience. And boy, did this send the PlayStation fanboys into a tizzy. I'm not going to go over all of them like I did the last time we covered a similar story. I'm just going to lead with the one that just solidifies, and again, I don't mean this as a pejorative, get some fucking therapy. So, Twitter X user, which I will not name, so we don't have to deal with that, quote, "This guy, Hiroki Totoki, has already solidified his legacy as the worst PlayStation CEO ever. He seems to know jack shit about gaming, just a businessman who wants to please the stakeholders. Soon PlayStation will be like Xbox thanks to him." And he photoshopped Hiroki Totoki in a photo as Osama bin Laden.
Wow, that's pretty extreme.
Yep.
Yeah, damn.
And if you look at the PlayStation blog, it is very obvious why they created this job. In the US and Canada, these are the top 10 best-selling games on the PlayStation 5 platform so far this year. Elder Scrolls 5, Oblivion Remastered, Elder Scrolls 4, Oblivion Remastered, Minecraft, Forza Horizon 5, MLB The Show 2025, NBA 2K2025, Clair Obscur Expedition 33, Call of Duty Black Ops 6, GTA 5, AC Shadows, Devil May Cry 5 Special Edition, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, Days Gone Remastered, which kind of shocked me,
Huh, yeah.
Split Fiction, EA Sports Football Club 25, EA Sports College Football 2025, WWE 2K25, Madden Sports 25, Mortal Kombat 1, another weird one, PGA Tour 2025, and Hardware Leg Hogwarts Legacy. There's a lot of Microsoft titles on that list.
Just to pin that for a moment so I can say, like, I hear every year about all these different sports, obviously not just FIFA, but all the other ones. How we all continue every year, us sports people, I'm only on the football side, but still, about how broken these games are every year. We need to stop buying them because you've just listed, what, six of them, five of them? Different sports, particularly FIFA, like FIFA's not in, or AFC, whatever. I don't think some people understand this, and this is a really crucial fundamental thing. And what I'm gonna say is not hyperbolic at all, because it's just the complete truth. If you have, let's say, any I pick out any IP that you're not satisfied with, right? But let's stick with sports games, specifically sports games for now, and they come out every single year, obviously, because there's new seasons every single year, so that naturally happens. You can tweet and go in whatever forums and Reddit and Discord, any social media platform you like, and moan about these games as much as possible. But if you keep moaning about the sports games every year online, but then keep giving your dollars or pounds or whatever to these companies, it doesn't give them a reason to put out a better product. The exact same thing applies to COD as well, because those don't come out in a great state. And like, as you were reading them, I was like, okay, when is he going to bring up the sports ones? And you pointed out like four or five of them. It's just that, because let's say particularly with EA and with let's just call it FIFA, because it still basically is FIFA. If we want these games to get better, you have to hurt these people's pockets. Because if you go like, right, I don't like the game you made last year, but I'm going to give you the money again, the same money again, for the next one. It doesn't give them an incentive or a reason to actually make the games better. It doesn't give them a reason to make them worse. It gives them a reason to, keep the resources pretty much the same and put out pretty much the same thing. But it keeps happening every year. It keeps happening every single year. And it continues to be very disappointing to see. And even though every single year when they go to do the trailers and the gameplay stuff, and they go, look at this cool new stuff we've got, the ideas that are in a lot of the new cool stuff is great, but some of it doesn't end up working properly. You'd be surprised. Let's say for you and other people that don't play EAFC, and I pointed out this glitch when we talked about the when I talked about the cover stars and I talked about this year's game. The amount of times in the last, I'll say 3 to 4 games particularly. So the last two FC games, which is 24 and 25, and the last two FIFAs, which was 22 and 23. When let's say when you're particularly, and I only notice it in career mode because I don't play Ultimate Team, is when you have like, oh, here's the new like storyboards and things like that for like, oh, this player's being transferred, and they put this like Fabrizio Romano cool thing. Those ideas are all great. They're all interesting, cool little things. But then when I literally see on a game that's been out for over 6 months and has had multiple patch updates, because you get notified when this happen, and you still have things like, and I consider these just more basic things, is when you have, let's say, like a story on the side panel thing, and it says literally as if it's like a not filled in text box, which come on, and it says like, it literally says player insert name on the released version of this game. It will say player insert name has gone to team insert team, as if like where the placeholder of the thing of, okay, clearly that box is supposed to say the player's name, and then clearly the team name is supposed to say the actual name of the team and not insert team name. There shouldn't be things like that still in this game after 6 months. And I don't like to call game developers lazy, because it's a very extreme industry. But I get if you've got things like a new feature doesn't quite work well, let's say a brand new feature has been introduced in the game and it works 95% of the time, but it's a little bit iffy, and then a patch comes out and it fixes it. Cool, that's great. But why does this game have like what I would personally describe as like a basic text issue, where someone literally just needs to go in there, click edit, and just put in, put in the name of the thing that's there, and things like that are still in these games. And that will probably be, because that's become more of a common glitch in the last couple of years, that will be in FC 26 as well. And then in, let's say, 4 to 6 months after FC 26 comes out, and we will come across a story that includes game sales, and it will still be on there again, which will mean again that none of us have learned anything.
Yeah,
So.
it's the reason why we have 7 Sharknado movies and 10 Fast and Furious movies. Because they make money. And as to your thing, I wouldn't call it lazy. I would call it low return on investment. Because we don't know how much code is actually going into what they make. But if you look at the past year's game and the current year game, there's not a whole lot of difference. So you're investing $60 in whatever time, and your return on that is a very, very minimally improved game, assuming it even launches in a fixed in a working state. So I would call it a low ROI game.
It's just like, why should there be text issues like that in a game? I get if you try to put some complicated fancy feature in there and it doesn't quite work, or something more complicated. Like when they put I think it was last year's game or the one before, when they put new power shots in. Like, okay, that might be a complicated thing to do because, for example, there's a lot of physics based in that. But anyway, so I just thought I just because you brought up the sports games in that list, I thought I would just point that out. So anyway, please continue.
That's really all I had with it outside of my disgust for that Twitter user doing the Osama bin Laden thing.
Yeah, it's
But yeah,
ridiculous. Yeah.
like I said before, there's like five or six of the top 10 games sold so far this year are Xbox owned properties. You know, how much effort Microsoft put into them as a core company, you know, that can always be debated. Because some are Bethesda, some are some other developer. I mean, they do have what, like 24 studios, I think. But they are under the Microsoft umbrella, and Microsoft could have very easily be like, nope, Xbox only. But they don't because they make the money. And this is what Sony is obviously moving towards. I haven't seen any numbers yet, and I doubt if I'll see any numbers because Microsoft doesn't release them. But when Helldivers 2 pops up on Xbox, that should be interesting to see how much traction that gets.
I think so. Just to talk about the actual story here and not my side football thing, I think this is going to be a case of, I think eventually Xbox is going to put all of their IPs on PlayStation because they've already got two of their main big three on there, which is Forza and obviously what next month, Gears of War. Gears of War is going to be there, so that will knock those barriers down. And to me, if you do one of the big three, that puts all of them on the table. Because I do think it's a case of when, not if, Halo goes to PlayStation, which will still be completely bizarre to see Master Chief on the PlayStation Store and not for the Halo TV seasons. But like to see a Halo game on the PlayStation Store, that will be, I feel like that will be kind of a moment in the industry. I think when it comes to Sony, yes, they put Helldivers on there, and they've put they're slowly doing some other ones. I do think when it comes to their bigger IP, so let's say things like Horizon, God of War, all of Naughty Dog stuff, apart from Crash Bandicoot because that's Activision. When it comes to the big ones, I don't see those games. I know some of them are on PC, like God of War, for example. I don't see those touching Xbox. I do think if you look to, let's say Death Stranding. Like Death Stranding, I think is supposed to be a second party IP. It's not in-house because Sony doesn't own Kojima Productions, and in fact, Kojima's working with Xbox on a separate game, and Death Stranding's also on Xbox. But of course, when Death Stranding 2 comes out for the first time, that's like very PlayStation centric, and then probably in 3 to 5 years that will be on PC and on Xbox. I do think that's still a very different approach to what Xbox is doing with PlayStation, because their window seems to be far shorter as well, particularly if you look at like Indiana Jones was what, less than a year. I know obviously Forza has been out a long time, that's a different example. Helldivers is the more different one so far, because Helldivers isn't that old, it's like what, just over a year old or something. And that's on. I do wonder if with that one, because that's more of maybe a live service thing, that's just that's just going to boost your online players' numbers. That's just, okay, you put in cross-play, say you have then PC, Xbox, PlayStation. I don't see really an issue with that. And when it does come to, let's say, the active live service games or multiplayer games we have in the industry, that's really the only one that, not notable active one that Sony's got. So that just in terms of boosting numbers for that makes sense. But I think, who knows, maybe I'm sitting here in, 5 to 8 years or whatever, and Last of Us is on Xbox or something, but I think Sony will keep those cards closer to their chest. Yes, I know, Last of Us 1, 2, and some of the Uncharted, some of them are on PC, but those games are 5 to 12 years old in certain situations, so they're not as new and as precious, if that makes sense. So
Well, I would love to see the original Greek God of Wars remastered and then released multi-platform. I think that would sell fairly decently.
that would be an interesting one to do. Yeah, particularly if that comes to Xbox, or because I could see something like that coming out and being PC and PlayStation to start off with, and then maybe in a couple of years after that be on Xbox. Because I don't think Sony has any issue at the moment, apart from the PlayStation sign-in thing. Which, by the way, if you are going to do more of a third-party approach, if we call it that, they've got to sort out that PSN thing, because that just feels like
Yeah.
such a big barrier at the moment. So, yeah. But no, I think they're going to look at what each other's doing and sort of put one here, put one there, see what floats and what does what. But I think I just, and I'll still stick by this until it maybe happens and changes, I just think with those big core Sony IPs, I think they're going to keep those closer to their chest. So like I don't think at least anytime soon you'll see Kratos or Ellie or Nathan Drake on like the Xbox store, but on Steam and that, or wherever they're being sold, I think they're already there. So yeah, the ultimate winner at the end of the day though is PC players with this, because you get the Game Pass stuff, you get some of Sony's games assuming you have a PSN account, and then yeah, you kind of get the best. You kind of get the best of all three, but not necessarily on day one. So, yeah. Anything else you want to talk about with this?
No, we can go ahead and move on.
All right.
And speaking of moving on, we got some leaked details. So this is a leak, so grain of salt. But according to sources who wish to remain anonymous, Battlefield 6 beta plans, there will be two betas during August. There will be a closed beta August 7th and 8th, which is a Thursday and a Friday. That will be obtained through Twitch drops and other events, and then that
Probably
will
that, I would
open up.
imagine. Yeah.
Yep, and that will open up the open beta phase, August 9th and 10th. So, though according to the article, that also says that pre-orders for Battlefield 6 will be live during the multiplayer reveal. No real specifics as to whether or not the Battle Royale mode will be in any capacity at the event.
Get rid of it.
The pre-order price is $70, so they're not going 80 yet, but they could.
Yeah. I think feels like there's been a little bit more tiptoeing around the $80 mark. I did see that. I think we covered it before, that Outer Worlds, Worlds, 2 reverted itself back to 70. So thankfully, it feels like companies are a little bit more hesitant to jump on that wagon just yet. And remember, if you for those of you who are annoyed at $80 games, which you kind of should be, Nintendo was the first one. So eventually, when everybody's selling their games for $80 and pretending that that's normal, we can continue to blame Nintendo because they were the first ones. So for standard edition games anyway. So there we go. Yeah, I'm curious to see what Battlefield 6 is gonna be about. I did hear that there was a campaign with the game, so I'm at least gonna play through that at minimum and do the
whatever the story has to offer. How much of the multiplayer I get into and where that takes me remains to be seen, but I will probably just wait for the open beta to come out. I don't plan on, you know, doing... I know some people sort of do the, like they do the Amazon pre-order. You take the code for that, then you cancel your thing so that you get the closed beta. I don't feel like I'll need to do that for this, but I'll just wait for the open beta, download that for free, usually, because that's the way that works, and then try it for myself and give some impressions on here, probably. So, because, as I said many times before, when it comes to particularly FIFA and COD, they really could do with some competition. Really, really need to do with some competition to take them. Not that I want the games to sell less, but, you know, to not see the complaining and the sales combined every single year, because it's a bad cycle. So, but I'll see what the gunplay is like, because, you know, I'm very particular about that sort of thing. And at minimum, just hope that all of this launches and works in the correct state. Whether you do or don't like certain features or gameplay parts, let's just hope that this, whether it is the beta itself or the game itself, that it at least launches in a good state. Because that was what kind of, not led to Battlefield 2042's downfall, because people are still playing it, but it didn't fulfill its potential and promise like it should have and could have, really. So this is sort of their next attempt, because I am rooting for it, because I want there to be more competition in the first-person shooter online genre, particularly military-focused games like Boots on the Ground. And again, it's basically just this and COD, really, for that type of... I know people play like Rainbow Six and all that sort of thing, but those are different types of games. Because really, just these two, just COD and Battlefield. So we'll see what they have to offer when the beta comes out, and if they put out like a multiplayer video or something, I'll check those out and see what's up with all that. Although sometimes if you do watch a first person shoot a game, like you watch footage of it and then you play it yourself, can feel a bit different. So we'll see. Any thoughts on what Battlefield 6 could do?
No idea. They haven't said anything about some new mechanic, and that would be about the only reason why I would play it, because the last one I did was for that free move mechanic in Call of Duty.
Oh, Omni Movement. Yeah,
Omni Movement, because that I was at least interested in. Okay, here's a brand new mechanic. What does it do? So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wonder if, because I know nothing about what's in this game, Battlefield 6. So I wonder if. That makes me wonder. I wonder if they have taken inspiration. Not that they're gonna have the exact same mechanic, but what the movement mechanics might be. Because I don't think. Because even though COD nowadays is known for the sort of slide, jump, run, even though that's not really, what that game's supposed to be, is what it's ended up being like. The Battlefield series has been known to be a bit more slow and tactical, so if you are going to do a new movement mode, which I'm not saying there is going to be one, but if there could be one, what that might look like in a different feeling kind of game. So, one thing I'm curious on, and something that they tried to put in 2042, which I still think is in there but doesn't work as well as it was going to, is the on-the-fly attachment changes. Like, I think you could... What was it? I think you could, like, lift up your gun or something, and it would have... you'd click on the muzzle, for example, and the character would, like... The character would flip the gun around to focus on the part of the gun you're looking at, and you could, on-the-fly, like, take something off and put something else on. So if you wanted, like, a bigger magazine, you could, like, look at your magazine, take it off, and the soldier would just have, like, a bigger magazine in their pocket. They put that on, and then you could just do that on the fly, which I always thought was quite a good idea. I suppose if you also, like, if you go from a more close quarters area to a bigger area, you could, like, change your scope or something, like a long, you know, things like that will play out more tactically. So I don't know if that is or isn't in this game, but that will be curious to see what they do with that. So we'll wait and see. But yeah, bare minimum, just I know it's like low expectations, but bare minimum, let's just hope that this stuff works on the days it's supposed to work. So we'll see. All right, what else have you got?
Well, this is one of those things that falls under the category It's super interesting to me, and I hope some people find it interesting. Valve co-founder Gabe Newell gave a lengthy interview to YouTuber, and I'm going to butcher this, so I apologize in the in advance. Zalkar Saliv, Zalkar Saliev. It was a wide-ranging chat from every from his Newell's new career, early career work. To his current daily routine, get up, work a little bit, then go scuba diving, which you can do when you're a billionaire. But he talks about his early start in computers, and as somebody who has lived not quite through all of it, because I'm not as old as him, but lived through most of it, it again just I forget how much things have changed. So a little excerpt from the half hour interview that's on YouTube. Quote, I started programming in high school. At the time, programming wasn't a career path. There were probably only a couple thousand programmers in the United States working on mainframe accounting and maybe some people doing stuff at NASA. But it wasn't like people said, oh, you know, this is a huge industry where everything gets developed. And software and video games didn't really even exist at that state. I was 10 before Pong came out. So when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a doctor, and programming is what I did when I thought I should have been doing something else. Excuse me for a second.
Oh,
Sorry, coughing fit.
it's all right. No worries.
The really interesting part comes later in the article, in the interview. It says, quote, I was visiting my brother, and I thought he and I were just going to hang out for a bit. But I found out that he was working on a C compiler for Microsoft. So I just hung out with him at work, and Steve Ballmer, one of the founders of Microsoft, came in, saw me, and got mad because I was distracting my brother from his job and said, quote, if you're going to be here hanging out, why don't you do something useful? So Gabe said, fine, I'll do a little work, and decided to take the quarter off and just work at Microsoft. And that's what led him to making Valve, making Steam, which if you it's one of those very subtle puns, you know, Steam Valve. If you get it, you get it. You don't. But you know, this led him to living the billionaire lifestyle of the true epitome of fuck you money, because he literally does nothing that he does not want to do, because he does not have to.
It's a good story though. I mean, I just remembered a quote and then I remembered what it was from. I think it's Greatness from Small Beginnings, which is something somewhere in one of the Uncharted games. I think it was what the ring that Nathan has. 'Cause what's the
Scully?
Parvis Magna or something like that. On it's
No.
like a Latin thing on Nathan's ring that he's got in the game, and it's Greatness from Small Beginnings, which is what some of these people do have. I think I remember reading a story about Stan Lee at one point that he like worked in a comic book shop and he was like, oh, I'm just doing like an odd job or whatever it is, I'll like be gone from here soon, and then of course blew up to what he ended up becoming. So some people can kind of almost like, I don't know if accidentally is the right word, but like accidentally end up like creating something incredible even if that wasn't the thing that they were sort of trying to do. Which is kind of like I don't know which version is more interesting, the kind of you start out very small and you think you're maybe like it's you're not going to be there for too long and then you end up creating something really big, or you work somewhere for a little bit which is somewhere you didn't intend to work, and then you end up creating something big from that. So that's kind of cool. So that little push that he got where it's like, hey, why don't you try and do something, helped along the way as well. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, what do you think of this?
I think it's like I said, it's fascinating for me because I remember not that full of a revolution, but I do remember the evolution of video games as an at-home console. You know, I had Pong, I had the 2600,
Mm.
and going on from there. I grew up in the era of the quarter munchers for arcade games, and I just it's one of those things that yeah you kind of forget because we're so spoiled now. You can build a PC having never touched a PC part before, just a couple of YouTube videos and the courage to actually do it. You don't have to worry about not grounding your motherboard and frying out your processor, which I have done.
Yeah.
The only real challenge is cable management. And if you want to do liquid cooling, which I would love to be able to take a class on that and get hands-on instructions, that's not something I'd want to learn by doing and making mistakes kind of a thing.
No. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. All right, what else can we talk about today?
Well, the last thing we have to talk about today is the summary and info dump for Microsoft at Gamescom. Gamescom in Cologne, Germany, the annual gaming event, August 20 to 24. Xbox announced everything that's going to be at their booth. Obviously, their big push is going to be the ROG box, Xbox Ally, and Ally X. There are both versions of the handheld will be available with demos including Hollow Knight Silksong, Roblox Sea of Thieves, and Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4. I gotta imagine Hollow Knight Silksong is going to be the big draw on the Ally because everybody is a big fan of that game. Grounded 2, which is actually out now, will have a presence there. Ninja Gaiden 4 is going to have a presence there. We're going to get some info on Indiana Jones and the story DLC, The Order of Giants, theme photos, boosts, photo ops, things like that. Age of Empires and Age of Mythology Retold will have a presence. Microsoft Simulator 2024 will have a presence, with their other big push being The Outer Worlds 2 will have a full exclusive theatrical presentation. A few other things will be in there, but nothing really of note. Because, there's like Power Wash Simulator 2, which if you like that, fine. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are the 4 days. There's also going to be some World of Warcraft stuff, Black Ops 7 stuff. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of stuff that they haven't said yet, but it'll be part of their broadcast channels on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. Bethesda will have its own broadcast. FanFest is coming back for Germany. So it's all on the news.xbox.com page if you want to look it up yourself.
Nice. Also, hopefully a State of Decay 3 Shadow Drop.
That would be nice. I'm not holding my breath, but that would be nice.
Yeah. I know we're both kind of waiting for anything, really, for that game. It was nice a couple of years ago when they showed like a new trailer just to remind us that the game was still alive. So that would be cool. Because you never know sometimes in this industry. I mean, did we know that Oblivion Remake was going to be shadow dropped? Or that the Ninja Gaiden, whatever it was, got shadow dropped? That's why they're shadow drops. So we shall see. I was kind of wondering about GamesCon because I remember when Jeff Keighley did Summer Games Fest, and I think he said at the end, like, see you at GamesCon. And then I kind of forgot about it, but it was at the back of my mind at that point. So, yeah, we'll see what else they decide to bring and, who else is going to be there and whatever else. So, I've not seen yet a lot of chat or excitement about Black Ops 7. I don't know if it's too early for that, but it is COD, so I don't know, because I'm obviously in those circles and there just haven't been that much chat about Black Ops 7 yet. So I'm still curious to maybe kind of check out Grounded, but I switched off the Game Pass after I finished South of Midnight and that, so yeah, let's have to see what else they've kind of got cooking up. Gears of War should be out in around that point, so I'm kind of curious as to what that kind of looks like as well. and then yeah, see what else. I'm curious about like Sea of Thieves is kind of quietly chugging along as well, which is kind of interesting. I guess it's, you know, it outlived Skull and Bones, which was good. So that's nice as well, because both of those games, you know, could have disappeared into thin air by now, but Sea of Thieves still is ongoing, which is nice for those players. I think Skull and Bones is as well. I just don't see much about that. So anyway, what are you looking forward to, maybe hoping to see at Gamescom for Xbox?
Obviously, you know, State of Decay 3, but like I said, I'm not holding my breath on that because of all the layoffs they've done this year. That could be delayed for God knows who knows how long. Not really interested in Outer Worlds 2. I did play a bit of the first game. I could never get into it.
Yeah, it didn't click for me either. So
we'll just have to. I'm actually more interested into seeing people's impressions for the handheld and the prices. I don't think I would ever buy one, but as somebody who follows tech and industry, I definitely want to know what the story is going to be with that.
Me too. I'm curious about it. I'm in the exact same boat, pretty much. I'm not going to get one because I don't need one, and I know I won't use it. But I do think it looks nice for what it's trying to do so far. So, and it's got better things going for it than what the Portal and certainly the Switch 2 does. So I just don't need any of the three of those. So, yeah. Because whenever I do go to play Xbox games, I am on my Xbox anyway. So. but no, it does look really nice, and it looks really good. So, yeah, we'll see what happens at Gamescom. I was going to say next month, but next month is in like a couple of days, pretty much. So, gosh, we're almost at... When did we get almost 8 months into it? It doesn't feel like 8 months of this year have passed. It feels like we should be in, like, March or something. Although it still feels like it's about 2023 to me. Like, the last... I don't know, the last couple of years are kind of blended together almost in this weird way. But yeah, we're almost 8 months into the year. You said that's the last thing you've got?
Yep.
All right, let's move in some feedback, some emails. Of course, if you'd like to write into the show, let us know what you're playing. If you like what you're playing, hopefully you do. If you've played Expedition 33, of course, no spoilers, please, but let us know your thoughts on that game, any other games. What do you think of the God of War show? Who would you cast? Have you read any scripts, that sort of thing? And what do you think, what are you hoping for, and what do you think could be at Gamescom for 2025? Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org. Social media is eTalkUK or Entertainment Talk, and there's information in your show notes. Harrison is first and says, if either of you had the chance to work at a particular game studio, whose would it be and why? I'd personally like to work for the Forza team, as I really like cars, but would prefer Microsoft's game rather than Gran Turismo with Sony. I guess that I know what you mean in terms of that, but I was going to say the game is also on PlayStation, but obviously gets made in-house at Microsoft. Probably Naughty Dog, but the thing is with that, because I wouldn't work for any of them in a real situation, because turns out it can be very, very easy and very, very, very sudden to get laid off in the industry. In fact, I remember reading stories from people that said, like, they found out they lost their job through a social media news post before they got told about it, which is awful and horrible and really nasty. So I'd rather follow the games and play them rather than make them. But for a hypothetical scenario, I'd probably say Naughty Dog, just because, again, I say I feel like I know that studio. Obviously, if I was in there and working, I might obviously find some new stuff or learn some new stuff. The thing is with that, though, if it was sort of, like, let's say they made new something new for Last of Us or whatever, I would... or something new for Uncharted or whatever, I'd rather just, like, rather than me putting my input in on what should be in those games, or let's say for Intergalactic, for example, if it was like, what ideas do I want in the game? It's like, I'd rather sit back and let you guys do what I know you're good at doing, rather than interjecting my own ideas. And not saying I would ruin it, but I would just want to sit back and let you guys do your own thing. Unless it would be like, I mean, in a passive way, I do quite enjoy the cleaning job I do. So if it was a case of, okay, working at Naughty Dog, but I could talk to people while I cleaned the building, that would almost like suit me better. Like in all the offices and that, they can just be working away on the games that I like. And then I can just, because I've seen like parts of Naughty Dog's building and they've got like, you know, all the art and different statues and stuff from the different games. So if I'm kind of looking at them while I'm cleaning away, just in some nice quiet time, saying hi to people, I probably would prefer that. I know that might be a weird thing to say, but yeah, I'd almost prefer to do that rather than like injecting myself into these games. So probably them. If it wouldn't be them, Insomniac would probably be my second studio, because they do, you know, Spider-Man games. I love Ratchet and Clank as well. So that studio. But that's probably the preference I would actually have. How about you?
Hard saying. Just because we only know like surface level stuff with these companies. Maybe Sandfall that did Expedition 33.
Okay.
But I don't speak French, so that would kind of be tough. I don't know that I'd want to check out Undead Labs, because I would have that fear of, they're like, oh, we're too far into the weeds for SO3, SO, you know, SOD3, so we gotta cancel it. I don't think my heart could take that. Definitely not a lot of the California-based companies, because they are so insane in their work schedules, and California is so expensive. It's like that job in San Mateo, 250 to 360, basically. Mm-hmm. That's barely upper middle class in California.
Damn.
Barely upper middle class.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we talked about that one time with that one executive that was so out of touch, and he was just like, oh, just get another apartment in the city to live in. You know, it's only an extra $40,000 a year just to get that one apartment. So
yeah, yeah.
No big deal. You can afford it.
What job would you actually want to do?
Honestly, marketing. Because I've seen so many video games
yeah.
either have no marketing or just stupid marketing. And I just love to be able to slap somebody and be like, what the hell were you thinking? Did you see that Jaguar commercial with all the weird neon Technicolor thing?
No, I don't think that.
I'll send you a link for it.
I'll probably get different ads to you, because, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like half Tron, half Xanadu, Fever Dream, and at no point in time do they show you a car. And yet they're trying to advertise Jaguar, and Jaguar's trying to blame the fact that their year-to-date sales from the previous sales are down 97.5%.
Ouch, that sounds like
on the fact that they're not trying to sell the cars and try to clear out inventory. It's totally not backlash to their psycho whack job ad.
Right, yeah.
I'll send it to you when we're done recording.
I do see a lot of ads where it's like you're trying to work out what it's for, and then it shows you at the end, and the thing that was advertised to you has no relation to the actual product itself. It's like, you may as well just not made the advert, because you almost just make it worse. Yeah. So, I do get weird ones on, well, not an advert per se, but on Disney Plus, where it's like, come here for these stories, and it's like, I'm already watching your I'm already here, why are you, because it comes up, and while I like the Toy Story part of it, because it does this thing of this wonderful journey, then make your next best friend, and it's Andy holding Woody, and then it's like, for thrilling stories, and it's like, I'm already here, you don't need to have it. I'm not even just browsing, I'm watching on your subscription service that you're telling me you've got stories on. Like, is that a way to keep me here? Because I'm already here? I don't know. Like, I get when, at least Disney Plus over here, had, like, Star added to it, and they admittedly did one of the better adverts I've seen, which is like, this is what Disney Plus is. And it had like Walking Dead, and I know because Disney Plus is different over here to there, and it had like Walking Dead and Grey's Anatomy, and it's like, Disney's not what you thought it used to be. That was actually helpful and interesting, but that was like 3 years ago or something. So but anyway, yeah, mine would be, I would either want to be a cleaner at Naughty Dog or a cleaner at Pixar, because I'm pretty sure I'd be happy at those places. So, as long as the people that are actually working there are as nice as I think that they are. So, they've both given me a lot of things that I've loved, so there's at least that.
See, if I was a cleaner at Disney, I'd mock up a Raspberry Pi and hide it in some of the executive offices and just eavesdrop on whatever the hell they're doing.
Yeah. So there we go. Plus it's the fact that, like, let's say I hypothetically worked on Naughty Dog and then they showed me like Intergalactic. It's like, well, I don't necessarily want to work on the game because then I'll know about it, and then when I go to play it, I'll know more about it than what I should. So yeah, I know that's not what this person was asking us, but you said if you were to work at the company, and
yeah,
you didn't specifically say game development, so I would, yeah, I'd be a cleaner at either Naughty Dog, Insomniac, or Pixar, or I could mix it up, visit, I don't know how far apart they are, but anyway, that's my answer. Just because yeah, you said you'd rather work with Microsoft
marketing
on, no, this what this person said, work with Microsoft on Forza rather than Gran Turismo with Sony. Is there like a third racing series? I know those are like the main two, Forza and Gran Turismo.
There's two types of Forza. There's the heavy sim racer.
Yeah.
And then Horizon is the more arcadey.
I guess,
but
I mean,
they haven't released
IP wise.
Yeah, they haven't released a heavy sim racer since 6, and that was about 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. But yeah, marketing would be, a lot of marketing departments need a lot of help, so hopefully you can help them with that. So yeah. And Claire writes in and says, first time, long time, welcome. Says, I quite enjoyed listening to your SOM review. I think you mean South of Midnight. I can't think of anything else I've reviewed with SOM. A South of Midnight review, and I love hearing you talk glowingly about a game when it's clear you love something. There's almost something heartwarming in the way you do it. So thank you for saying that. Sometimes it's just nice to talk about something you really like. So, however, when you talk negatively about a game, it can be more difficult to listen to. I did find your FF7 Rebirth review to be somewhat reasonable, though, and your MW3 review for the campaign, it cuts off there. So, yeah, it's because, see, because I always think, whether I'm, like, really not enjoying something and I know I'm going to be reviewing it, or I'm really loving something, particularly more when I'm really loving something, and I'm like, right, let's try to be, and I'd say it on the podcast at the time, in the moment, I'm like, right, I'm trying to be, you know, let's go back to being reasonable and balanced. Is there, even if it is nitpicks, just like, just mentioning things to balance the conversation, or to balance the talking points. But when it does come, like with FF7 Rebirth, for example, I was like, yeah, 70% of this game is really quite good. It's just the other percent that really killed the momentum of that, and that was like my key problem. But when it comes to, because it's difficult to get me genuinely angry, and I don't know, because maybe I don't realize it in the moment, I don't know what's the angriest podcast I've done. Like, I couldn't point you towards a particular one. I've clearly been a lot, like, I know how to be disappointed on, like, when Man United lose a cup final or something, and it just really kind of stings. I still think about the FA Cup final from 2 years ago. Not by the way, the Europa League final from a couple of months ago, because I didn't expect us to do anything, and we didn't, therefore I wasn't disappointed. Because I know I shouldn't, but I never had any idea or faith or belief that we would win that game or do anything in it, because of how bad we'd been, and then we didn't win it, we lost it, so I wasn't surprised. So that didn't sting as much, because I almost like expected that to happen. So, but yeah, with like, let's say the Modern Warfare 3 one, that's more of like, what is this? Why did you do this? Why, like, that kind of thing. Because I don't think you'll ever catch me doing like when Angry Joe gets angry at stuff, he's actually good at doing that. And I think it's difficult to be good at doing that when it's like, because I've seen certain people online try to be like yelling to the microphone, full on angry, and it's off putting sometimes. And I just, and sometimes they're almost like trying to do that. Whether it's because like, oh, I can put in a title, look how much I hated this thing, and it's sort of not clickbait, but it's like encouraging you to be like, oh, look how angry I got at this thing, isn't that funny or cool or interesting? And sometimes you can just tell people are trying too hard to do that, and when it's noticeable it comes off worse. But because I think when it comes to let's say Angry Joe, because he's an example I can think of, he points out stuff that is like blatantly bad in a game, but then what he'll also do is he'll say like, when this thing works, when this thing doesn't, and then he'll actually have footage of himself playing the game, showing you the thing that he's talking about, not in the way of like proving he's not lying, but showing you an example. And obviously we don't really do that here, but he'll like describe when something happens and be angry about it, and then show himself being angry in the moment, experiencing it. So I think that kind of adds to that. I don't watch like loads and loads of his stuff, but usually with him, if I hear that something's been really, really awful and he does a video on it, I usually watch those. But because I don't think I have ever deliberately tried to be like act in that way, because I've always said multiple times, like, if I go to do any podcast or anything and I'm not being honest, whether it's something I did like, didn't like, or anything in between, if I was to ever sit down and record something and not give an honest opinion, then there's no, that doesn't benefit me, it doesn't benefit you, it doesn't benefit anybody else, because then I'm not being truthful, and that's not what I want. So but the thing is with, let's say, because FF7, as much as I had issues with FF7 Rebirth, it's a much better game than Modern Warfare 3. Because there's at least parts in those games that you can like, whereas I think there's genuinely nothing really salvageable from Modern Warfare 3. But that again is because the idea was odd from the start with what that game was trying to be and supposed to be. But that wasn't one where it was sort of, with Modern Warfare 3, it was sort of, I don't expect much from this game because of what I think it is going into it. And it was even worse than I thought it was going to be. And I already thought it wasn't going to be very good. But what just really kind of, not pushed me, but pushed my further specific disappointment, was how badly they messed up No Russia. Because I remember when I finished, spoilers for Modern Warfare 2, but you already know that if you know what I'm talking about. When they did the end scene of the campaign in Modern Warfare 2, and it's a simple text of like, some agent texts another agent and goes No Russian, and I should have anticipated that that would be in the game, but because that wasn't on my mind, I was like, oh my god, they're bringing back No Russia, that's so cool, and everything they could do with it. And then you just completely mucked it up in Modern Warfare 3. And the issue you have with that now, let's say Activision goes and says like, okay, anything that happens in the campaign of Modern Warfare 3 is not canon. None of it ever happened, and we're going to do Modern Warfare 4. And let's say that in MW4 they brought back No Russia. You've already, because it had been like over 10 years and it'd been so long since we've seen those characters, you've already kind of killed that. So anyway, that's just me kind of trying to explain, I guess, some of the process with that. Because if it was a case where because I had no nostalgia for FF7. I've obviously been aware of the game for like over 20 years and whatever, but I never played it and never had nostalgia for it. So I imagine even if I had the same gameplay thoughts on it, it probably would have disappointed me even more, because then I would have had the like nostalgic expectations. But there you go. So anyway, what do you kind of think of all of this?
Well, what it is that when I'm ever, I don't really do reviews per se, but when I'm giving my opinion on a game that I don't like, I always try to do my best to put it in context. It's like I say, I didn't like this game, but I'm not much of a shooter. Probably one of the more famous games is that I didn't like Witcher 3 because I couldn't get my concept around the combat. And I was very adamant that it wasn't the game, it was me. So it takes a lot for me to not like something because I can always try to find at least something to credit. Like, again, with Witcher 3, it had great graphics. From what little I got into the story, it seemed intriguing. It's just that combat is so much a part of that game, and I couldn't get the combat to work in a way I wanted to. I wound up tapping out. The only other game that's really like that for me is Skyrim, and that's just because it's what, 12 years old now, and they still haven't fixed that
Something like that.
disappearing companion bug.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good, good.
But yeah, outside of that, I don't really have a whole lot of games that I hate or don't like. And the ones that I do, it's for a very obvious reason. And that goes the same with movies and TV shows. I don't even care if it's like a smart idea, as long as just it's well written. Like, I kind of fell off on the Fast and Furious movies, but I did watch 9 just because I love the way how Jason Momoa played his characters. And I'm like, it's about time we had somebody that just embraced the insanity, because we're putting people in a car and we're sending them into space, but we got to be serious about everything else. We're thinking a hacker could completely take over a 40-year-old sub and hypercars driving across a frozen lake can outrun a torpedo, can get caught up to by a torpedo that said hacked submarine fired at them, but we got to keep it serious. No, embrace the insanity. Go nuts.
Certainly, yeah. But yeah, sometimes it's just about looking at, instead of looking at the why is this not good, looking at the why was this done this way or why was this made in the first place. Because, like, if the idea of something, whether it's the whole product or part of a product or a game mechanic or whatever it is, if the idea is flawed from the start, then your chances of success become much lower. I always, not to go back over Modern Warfare 3, but the very moment I read Modern Warfare 3 is the year after Modern Warfare 2 and it's not Infinity Ward, I was like, okay, that's the that like that just that immediately just gave me this sort of okay, what, why, like you've never done that before with these games, and it's like okay, you just don't need to do that. Why did you do that for? And then when I later found out that instead of 3 years it was like 16 months, it's like, well, you just didn't, why didn't you just keep the same 3 year cycle? It had worked for 15 years, 16 years, whatever it was. Why did you decide to do this for? Like Infinity Ward's been successfully making these games for ages. Why did you give it to somebody else? And didn't work. So, yeah. But it, you just read like a headline like that, and you think, wait a minute, why? And it strikes you in that way of confusion as to why, like, who said yes to this thing, and then all hope you had for that product just kind of goes away. I don't know. So, anyway, that's kind of my thoughts on that stuff. I'm trying to think of, yeah, what's the angriest I've been on a podcast? There's a lot of United Cast episodes I've just been really annoyed at. Really, just like a player did something really bizarre, really silly, or there's been a few instances of that. Like there's been games that we've done really well, just haven't quite put away one or two shots, and we lost by one goal, and it sucked. But you could see, like, it wasn't a failure, but then So you kind of, oh, that's a bummer, but like you almost move on from it. And then there's certain games that matches that are just a disaster, and there's just so many problems or whatever. So yeah, we'll see what this season holds, I suppose. Anyway, last, Beth writes in and says, any thoughts on the new age verification thing in the UK? I've used it for, it's not for anybody being like, oh, it's just for porn or whatever, it isn't. It's for most apps and sites that have 18 plus content. So when I went on Reddit and Discord, when I went on Twitter itself, it didn't come up on Facebook. That's the only one I noticed that it didn't come up on. It asks you for like face ID stuff, which I've heard some people say they thought of like a celebrity who was, let's say, middle-aged or whatever, and they showed their camera to that and it just accepted it.
That's what they're doing, photo mode for Death Stranding 2. A lot of people are using that to do the photo ID.
Well, right. But I mean, the thing I don't know about over in America, obviously you're talking about the, because this was like a couple of days ago that it was introduced. The thing I will particularly say about it, because you get, what do you think on like the government's attempts at doing this and whether it does or doesn't work? And it's a brand new thing; it's not going to properly work from the start. The balance that you've got to strike with, again, people that are under 18, is like, okay, so you have their schools that they go to where they're gonna learn stuff, be around friends, their friends have got phones, and the parents aren't gonna be there. And then you've got government, which obviously has say over school policies and whatever, and then policies over certain things that can happen at home. I think the bigger picture issue, rather than like, oh, does this or does this not work, is it a good idea? Because some parents are terrible, and I mean that in lots of different ways. And the problem you've got in today's day and age, because some people don't know how to parent properly, and it's not always their fault. Maybe they haven't learned something particular, or they're struggling for a particular reason. Some of them are just awful because they just either don't care, or they maybe didn't really want kids, or whatever the reason may be. Some parents are fantastic as well, but because we live in this day and age of, okay, you give a kid an iPhone and they have access to basically the entire world, because what's stopping them? Because as soon as they start getting into, you know, Facebook, TikTok, Reddit, Discord, whatever, they've basically got the world at their fingertips and they can look at anything. And the problem is, when you come across, I'll say more like 16 and under rather than maybe 18 and under, and particularly, let's say, like around that 12, 13 year old range, when like teenagers get bored, which can happen very easily and very quickly, and you go, right, here's this distraction device, take an iPhone, and you don't always, shut up phone, you don't always quite realize, or maybe you do realize but don't care or whatever, about what your child can get into, or your son or daughter can get into. So there's at least something, I think having that is better than not, having the age verification thing is better than not having it, because if it becomes sort of, let's say a 13 year old then can't get access to something that will maybe harm them in some way or whatever, it's better for them to have that block there if they've got a bad parent that's just like, right, just take this phone and just, you know, leave me alone for 20 minutes while you scroll through TikTok. Because if you lift all those age verification stuff, you have no idea what they could get access to and how quickly that can happen. You click on a link for something, you read something, you know, within minutes they could be into something. While it, okay, isn't perfect right now, it's better than not having it, I think. And doing the thing myself on like Discord and Reddit, it did come up on Twitter, but I couldn't actually find where to the actual menu for it, because I came across someone's tweet at some point for something, and it's like, you can't read this because of age verification. I was like, right, let me do it then. And it said, click on learn more, and all that took me to was a page to read about the information rather than actually doing the face ID thing. It is kind of awkward to get into when you do have, like, you know, your room's too bright, your room's too dark, your face isn't close. It's got those sorts of things, but I think it's better to have it there than to not, because and I think it is more of a parent issue than a government issue, to be honest. So I'd rather it be there than not be there. So yeah. Anyway, I don't know what you've heard about all this or what your kind of thoughts are on that sort of stuff.
Well, Ronald Reagan, who was president of the United States from 1980 to 1988, had a famously prophetic line: "The most dangerous sentence in America, in the world, is 'I'm from the government, I'm here to help.'" Mm-hmm. I think the people that passed this into law are fucking morons. I think you're a fucking idiot to willingly give up a freedom. I have always had an issue with people that demand all freedoms be curtailed because some people abuse them. Because you're punishing me, you're convicting me and punishing me for a crime I did not commit. And you say, oh, it's better than nothing. Look at some of the bullshit in California. I forget if I've talked about this on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard of Prop 49?
I don't think I have, no.
Prop 49 was passed in California as a public mandate in 2014. And it is a perfect example of the phrase, "the road to hell is paved with good intentions." So what they did was they passed a public mandate to where the cops will not show up for shoplifting under a certain dollar amount, which on the surface makes sense. It's like, you don't want the cops called because somebody stole a candy bar or they stole a can of Coke or whatever.
Yeah.
Take a wild stab at the guess at what dollar amount they set that limit to.
I think you told me this before, and it was quite a high dollar amount. Yeah.
$950 US. Mm-hmm. So think about this. You're in California. You can waltz into an electronics store, grab a PlayStation 5, an extra controller, and a couple of games, and bounce, and the cops won't show up to do you. That's the reason why all these cities are just massive shop. Look up San Francisco shoplifting on YouTube. If you're in the UK, you're definitely going to need to have some kind of a internet protection. Otherwise, the government will definitely censor it from you. And just see, like, mobs. And there was one clip. They were doing a news report at a store about the shoplifting. Guy just rolls in on a bike, dumps a bunch of stuff in the basket, turns around. The reporter says, "Why you do this?" And the guy says, "'Cause I can," and he just pedals his ass out. Stores are leaving left, right, and center. Some of these cities are dead. They just don't know it yet. San Francisco, the Hilton Hotel, the company that owns the investment group that owns the Hilton Hotel chain, abandoned a 1,900-unit hotel downtown San Francisco because occupancy was down to 27%, and the whole place was overrun by homeless. Mm. Next to that, the biggest mall in San Francisco also surrendered its property to the city because of the massive crime, the massive shoplifting. And, you know, just start doing some video searches on California, Los Angeles, San Francisco, places like that. It is one step removed from being a hybrid of Escape from New York and Fallujah. It is insane how bad that is getting right now. Mm. And they all voted for it. So I have, as much as I, it's like there was a wildfire earlier this year, wiped out good chunks of the city. And it was last year. There was massive wildfires last year, wiped out big chunks of the city. Fire hydrants had no water because all attempts to build more reservoirs for firefighting were blocked by city council members. So all these places just burned to the ground. They can't go back because they can't afford to rebuild, and all the properties are now have squatters on them. and squatters have more rights than homeowners. And so people are just literally abandoning what used to be, a $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 out house that's now a, still $300,000 patch of dirt that has a dozen homeless people living on it that they can't legally get rid of. Same way with New York. Look up some New York squatter right laws. It's basically there's no point in buying a house because all somebody has to do is go in, kick you out violently, change the locks, say, I'm living here now. The cops won't even show up to yank them out the house. They're like, nope, you gotta go through a 9-month eviction process
Damn.
to legally get him out of your house. And in the meantime, you're still paying all the bills. It's actually gotten so bad that people are going to like loan sharks, but not going to loan sharks to get a loan. They're going to loan sharks who have ties to the mob, and they're doing whatever they do for the mob to get those people out their place. That's how bad it is in New York. And if you think, oh, it's bad, but it'll fix itself with, the IDs and the censorship, no, it's not going away. It's not going to get better. I did a quick search on the internet. According to the Standing for Freedom Center report, 12,183 people were arrested last year over their social media posts. That's not going down. That's actually up 58% from last year. You literally can go to jail for whatever you post online, is if it's not approved think by the government. The book 1984 was a warning, not a fucking instruction manual.
Well, it doesn't help when people have blue ticks and they're encouraging each other to hate each other for revenue. So, but no, my main point with it with that is because I'm not gonna say names on here or whatever. I've seen some very what's the word I'm looking for? Not odd. Very. Let's just go with the word strange. Some very strange and just like, okay, what the hell? Examples of parenting, and it sometimes just boils down to, okay, if the parents aren't going to do better, and let's say social people that get involved aren't going to do enough to change the situation, then the penny has to drop in some other way. And I'm talking about that in a lot of different types of ways, both physical and online and other ways. But my main point of it is, if you're going to be a parent who, let's say, you're just not bothered about the content that you're young, let's say either young teenagers or whatever are consuming, and you're just like, right, just take this iPhone and leave me alone. Go to your room with an iPhone with full access to the internet, and there's nothing stopping that young, uneducated person from accessing anything and everything, because the parent doesn't care. If there's then nothing stopping that child from, okay, because whether it's they have to sign up for emails or different accounts, whatever. A kid of that age is just going to get through that no problem, and then access loads of stuff that's going to harm them in one way or another. And I'm not talking about free speech stuff. I'm just talking about dangerous content that will then start shaping that person. And if the parent doesn't get involved in that and stop that, and this, let's say a school that they go to either doesn't know about it or can't stop it, whatever. Something else has got to give, otherwise that's just gonna, in my opinion, set that person on possibly quite a bad path. And again, the idea that they've got, it's not perfect, it's not fantastic, but if it's a case of let's say a young child tries to access something which maybe they shouldn't be, and then it says, hey, can we scan your face for photo ID? Now, while they could point their camera at a poster of somebody on the wall who's older, and that lets them pass, that's obviously an issue. But if it's a case of, oh, they try and scan their face and it goes, nope, we've marked you as the teenage group and not the adult group, access restricted, that's one way of keeping them out of something that might be dangerous that the parent isn't going to stop them from doing. That's my main point to that. I did see some talk online of like, and this was mainly on Twitter, so take it from what you will, that like this is like stepping on free speech, but it isn't, because if you are old enough and you do have, let's say, a face that gets recognized by the scanner ID, which mine did, you can then pass that, go through that, and then still access the exact same things you were before. So it's not, I don't really view that as censorship in the same way, because you're trying to access the same things that weren't, like that content was not altered or changed. You just have a block on it that you have to scan a face to get through. And again, is the face scanning great? Is it not good? Is it perfected? No, it's not where it obviously needs to be. It's a very, very new thing, but that's why I would say it's something better than nothing, because at least it has that block on it for children with parents that just don't care. So that's just.
But again, why is that my cross to bear? You keep saying dangerous content. That's your opinion that it's dangerous content, unless it's like something blatantly obvious, like saying kill this group of people or kill that group of people. I know people that think going to the gym is dangerous mentally for people. I've seen so much bullshit. And this is what makes it really hard for me to be a free speech, because I'll see just yesterday, there was a mini riot in Cincinnati, Ohio, and one person got beaten very bloodily, very badly, and a city council member said she asked for it. And do I think that's an insane thing to say? Absolutely. Am I going around saying kick that person off the internet? No. It's like all the Twitter posts that I talked about this week and last week, I've never said kick them off the internet, because as much as I hate what they say, at least here in the States for now, they have the right to say it. But you just launched down a slippery slide that you're going to wake up one day and all of a sudden something you loved, something you cared about, is going to be deemed dangerous content and it will get banned. And you walked right into that trap.
No, I am talking about like actual genuinely dangerous things that are encourage like young people to do dangerous things, like go out and attack people. I'm not talking about like someone who doesn't like the Helldivers is on Xbox or something. Like those people you can, you know, passively ignore. But I'm more talking about people that like encourage other people to do, yeah, like dangerous things, or show them like things like that. Because again, I just think if you give access to a young uneducated person content like that, they can get access to that and sift through that so quickly that, and again, if you have a parent that doesn't care about it and they just leave them to it, that will happen. And unfortunately that young person might not know any better. Not because of their fault, but because they've been given access to something because they're then not being monitored on it either, because there's then nothing stopping that person from accessing that content. Because again, if it's something that, let's say, they only do at home, the school wouldn't be aware of it. A parent, you would have them that doesn't care. And if you then would have, let's say, no internet access restrictions, there's then nothing stopping that from happening. And that can lead to a really, really quite a bad place. So I'm not talking about that young person like avoiding weird, stupid takes from people. I'm talking about like really dangerous content. But
dangerous content is a vague and undefined term. And so you can use it to, again, you can use that to label anything as dangerous content. And I have seen that before, and it never ends well. You know, read a history book.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose it depends on the person. So, but then if you don't have a parent like properly guiding them, you essentially just then have like let's say 13-14 year old just on the loose, essentially. Not on the loose as in running in the street, but on the loose in terms of that can then just act like, what can't you access on a phone? You can access anything on a phone. To go back to an earlier recommendation, this is kind of some of the stuff that Adolescence touches on, which is that Netflix series, which is why I think that is important for young people as well. So, but anyway, for somebody who is, let's say has, I mean, I don't always have sense, but somebody who has more sense, I had no problem getting past. It took a couple of tries and a couple of, you know, odd bits and bobs and whatever, but I got through it and I regained access to the content that I already had access to. So, but no, it's not perfect, and because it's also new and whatever else. So we'll see where that leads to. Do you have anything similar in the US? Like face verification?
I mean, there
stuff?
Are age restrictions on a lot of content. Anything, because anything gambling has to be at least 18 plus.
Right.
Anything alcohol related has to be 21 plus. Anything sex related is generally 18 plus. But they don't go through, you know, this fascism of show us your ID. Now, there are some dating apps that require an ID, which I don't use because, as if you're following the whole drama with the T app, that's the very reason why I don't put my driver's license out there. And go down that rabbit hole if you want to. I'm not talking about that. That whole thing is stupid. But see, it doesn't really affect you in the sense that we're not talking about a thought, an idea. We're talking about a product that's a restriction on to purchase. Mm. There's a big, big difference between the two.
I'll sign up for this dating thing, I'll pop the date of birth in and confirm it through an email. Like, anyone can easily do that. That's not even like age verification. That's just, hey, can you promise that this is your correct age? And then if you had like a photo thing for a profile, well, you could easily like grab a photo of somebody that's older and then go from there. So, because that's another dangerous rabbit hole that a young person can go through if that didn't work right, which is sign up for one of them, because let's say they think that's a good idea and then come across God knows what. So,
And again, it goes back to making it a law doesn't mean it's going to stop. The number of people that are like, oh, if we just make this a law, oh, if we just ban this, then it'll never, ever happen again. And I'm just like, send the asteroid. Just please send the asteroid. You've opened Pandora's box. Enjoy the Hell Gondola ride from here on out.
Yeah. Anyway, that's our long answer to that question. So, all right, I can breathe again. All right, and for anybody that's got any thoughts on it, if you're in the UK or not in the UK, so if you have or haven't had to use it, let us know your thoughts on it. And yes, there's a lot of ways it could be improved, but it's an idea. So anyway, you can find all the rest of the content that we do on entertainmenttalk.org for TV, games, films, and Mary Night podcasts. Look out for podcasts in the coming days. That's usually the situation. So look out for all that. If you want to support the stuff that we do, you can either listen to more stuff, whether on our social media, and if someone mentions a thing we've podcasted on, like the new Superman film, or whatever else, let them know about said podcast. You can also support us by going to Patreon and looking at the $5, $10 level tiers for the ad-free podcast with your options. Look for that as well if you like to. TV and film news. Geektown Radio is back. It wasn't supposed to be back this early because of various things with David, which he did discuss on Geektown Radio. That is out now and available to be listened to. So you can go from here to there and get your latest TV and film news and the return of Geektown Radio. You can also still head to geektown.co.uk itself and look at the different TV and film news posts over there. And you can also find us on YouTube as well, Entertainment Talk Plays, for all those things. I did upload I don't know if it was the full boss fight. I finished the boss fight on Expedition 33. It said it was 15 minutes. I don't know if that was failed attempts in there. I just clipped the whole 15 minutes and stuck it on YouTube. So if you want to see some of that, there ain't really any spoilers in there. It's just a boss fight. You can check that out as well on YouTube, as well as Astrobot stuff and everything else. That's Entertainment Talk Plays. over on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.